We have now come to a stage when it is necessary to have clear-cut conceptions of the terms we are using and are likely to use more frequently than before. As you all know, our existence, this creation of which we are a part, starts at the summits from Sat Chit Ananda. There is first an existence that is called Sat. The nature of this existence is consciousness. It is Chit. And this chit, again, has two aspects. The aspect of consciousness, awareness, and the aspect of force. And the nature of this conscious being is delight, ananda. Sat, chit, ananda are not three different things, but a triune truth at the head of manifestation. This Satchidananda is the highest conception that has been given to man of the reality, insofar as it lends itself to our conception. The reality in itself, which is beyond the human conception, is called the Absolute, the Parabrahma. We can say nothing of it. We cannot say that it is not. Any kind of attempt to define it would amount to an offense to the purity and unknowability of the Absolute. We can know something of the Absolute only as far as it is turned to manifestation. In itself, we cannot know. As turned to manifestation, we can know, but not in the way of the mind. We can know of its nature through our consciousness, but not through our intellect. That is why they say in the Upanishads, speech and mind fall back when they approach the reality. The reality escapes the grasp of the mind, that is the intellect, and speech. But what cannot be known by the mind, it does not mean that it cannot be known in other ways. Our consciousness, our awareness, can identify itself with these truths and know it in its own way. And that is how we know of Sat Chit Ananda, the triune truth or reality that heads the manifestation. When the Sat Chit Ananda decides to move into manifestation, it determines itself, bringing together the knowledge of what it wants to do and the will or the power to effectuate what it wants to manifest. And this self-determination of Sat Chit Ananda in the creative poise is known as the supermind. This supermind again has three broad stages, grades. At the highest, it is characterized by utter unity. There is a oneness. When it means to manifest, necessarily, there is the many. But the many are held in the close grasp and embrace of the one. At no stage, at no moment, are the many separate from the one. It is the one as the many. The emphasis is on the one, oneness. The second stage comes when the many, the emphasis is shifted to a kind of equality, the one and supported by it the many. Both are equal truths. The utter dependence of the many on the one is not so much emphasized here. The many are also true. They depend upon it, they derive from the one. But both are true. The third stage comes when the emphasis goes more on the side of the many. This, the one is at the background, but the many are preponderant. This is the third stage. This play between the one and the many is a basis, the triple gradation of the supermind. When this emphasis upon the many, upon the individual units, goes a little further, so much so that the sense of oneness is left behind and each pursues its career, aware indeed at its center that it is part of the one, but in practice it looks ahead and pursues its career as if it were separate, not really separate. We come in the region of the overmind. And when this movement reaches its culmination, in an effective sense of independence, of separativity, we are on the level of the mind. In between the overmind and the mind, there are different gradations in which the consciousness, the manifesting consciousness, limits itself, narrows its range till below in the mind it reaches a definitive stage of self-forgetfulness, and ultimately it leads through the level of life and matter to an utter nations, complete forgetfulness not only of the unity but of everything. That is the nadir, the lowest point of the plunge of the reality. On the reverse path, the path of ascent following the path of descent, once we reach the level of mind and further evolution is to take place, the mind itself can be analyzed into three grades. The lowest layer of the mind, human mind, is the sensational mind, the sense mind. Our senses, hearing, seeing, speech, all these, they go as errand boys, get the reports, and that part of the mind which is presiding over these movements of senses it collects the data and formulates its reaction. So this part of the mind, which depends upon the senses for its data and moves in the realm of senses, is the sense mind. What in the Indian tradition they call the manas is just that. Above the sense mind is the dynamic mind, the mind that effectuates, the mind that has power, the mind that wills to do things. Whether it has knowledge or not is another matter. But what it knows, what little it knows, it wants to effectuate, it wants to work. That is the dynamic mind. Above the dynamic mind is the reasoning mind. As the mind develops, the faculty of discrimination, reasoning, whether this is right, whether that is right, whether this is correct or incorrect, that faculty develops. And we have what is called the reasoning mind. But that is not the end. The reason today has recognized its severe limitations. It has been forced to see areas in consciousness which it cannot grasp, which it cannot decipher. And above the mind, there are levels which we call the higher mind, the higher levels of which are called the spiritual mind. Above the spiritual mind or the higher mind is the illumined mind. That is, mind, whatever it knows, that knowledge is lighted up by a spiritual light. One knows in the normal way, but that knowledge is lighted up, one has no doubt about it. But above the illumined mind is what is called the intuitive mind, where truth, knowledge, plays in the form of flashes. And each flash, as Sri Aurobindo has described, is an edge of truth. It is a direct reaching of true knowledge to the mind. This is the intuitive mind. Above the intuitive mind is the over mind, and above the over mind is the super mind. Now, with this background, you will appreciate what is the role of the intuitive mind in our ascent to the supermind? Because the transition from the highest level of the mind to the supermind cannot be direct. Supermind, as we noted, is not just a superior mind. It is differently made. Its texture is different. Its process is different. Its vision is different. The mind is a laborer in search of knowledge. Supermind holds knowledge in its sovereign grip. It doesn't have to seek for knowledge. It has only to turn its gaze. And it has the knowledge that is with it, that which is pertinent, that which is relevant, it comes before the supramental vision. And the chief characteristic of the supramental knowledge, the knowledge of the supermind, is that it is self-aware and all-aware. There is a knowledge of itself, what it contains, the truth that it carries. It is also accompanied by knowledge of the all, of what is manifested. So this combination, just combination of self-knowledge and all knowledge is a characteristic of the supermind in every poise. In itself it is supreme. But when this supermind, for instance, is being manifested or organized on our earth plane by a divine being, call it a God, the God has to take account of the conditions, the mental conditions and other conditions in which he has to express or organize this double knowledge, self-knowledge and all knowledge. But he has it with him. The difficulty is in creating conditions in which alone this dynamics of knowledge can work naturally. The difficulty is much more in the case of the individual who is rising from the mental planes, evolving from our levels towards the supermind. He has first, the individual, the sadhaka, the seeker, has first to grow into the nature of the supermind. Theoretically, philosophically, he may know what is supramental knowledge, the nature of it. But that remains a conception. For it to become true, part and parcel of its being, the individual has not only to perfect his mind, but to take it up level by level into the supramental domain. Second, even if the supramental knowledge were by a miracle to manifest in the human mind, there are no organs, no faculties to express this knowledge. For our mental knowledge, we have evolved the necessary faculties, the necessary organs. But for the supramental knowledge, the Gnostic knowledge, the organs are yet to be shaped and built. The present organization of the mental apparatus has to be completely changed. And Sri Aurobindo cites the analogy. What a great change the animal mind had to go through. How the working of the animal mind had to be overturned and completely overcast by nature before the working of the faculties of the human mind, the reasoning mind, the discriminating mind became possible. The gulf between the animal mind and the human reasoning mind, Sri Aurobindo says, is nothing compared to the gulf that exists between our present mind and the supermind. A greater change has to be effected than was effected by nature when the transition was made from the animal level of the mind to the human. And for this change to be possible, a spiritual development is indispensable. Our highest developed intellect, the reasoning mind, has to undergo modifications that are inevitable when it is being spiritualized. spiritualized means the mind giving up its sense of separativity, its sense of confining its idea of truth and reality to material form. Of separating the abstract from the concrete, of placing itself separately in a subjective poise, and of observing the object of knowledge, placing it in an objective poise. So this kind of self-separation and observation of things as others, which are all characteristic of the human mind, they have to undergo a spiritual change and modification. The mind has to learn in the way of the spiritual mind, the spiritual consciousness, to identify itself with the object of knowledge and learn, grasp the contents of that object. This is just one illustration of the change that is expected of the mind when we ask it to undergo spiritualization. Then comes the stage of perceiving the unity of life, unity of mind in the universe. And this too can come only to the extent to which the mind opens itself to the spiritual sense of oneness. In a word, the mind has to abandon its nether basis and take a leap into the spiritual heights, so that it becomes familiar with the operations of the higher echelons of the mind, particularly the spiritual mind, which is an open field for the play of still higher faculties like illumination, like intuition. If faculties like intuition and illumination were to operate at our level, they are bound to be diluted, mixed up with the inferior workings of our sense mind and interested vital mind and even rigid reasoning mind. All these interfere with the play of the higher faculties like intuition or illumination. But if the mind has been spiritualized, has been converted into a spiritual mind, that possibility is much less. Spiritual mind provides a more natural field for the play of those higher faculties than the reasoning or the sense mind. The spiritual mind certainly is not the highest that we can attain, but it is a necessary stage before we can hope to enter into still higher realms of consciousness. And in this, between the spiritual mind and the supermind, still there is a gulf. And there, it is here, in bridging this gulf between the spiritual mind and the supermind, that the role of intuition comes. We have seen that at our level, whenever intuition acts, our mind interferes. It wants verification. Even if there is a self-evident certainty about a suggestion, or a perception that is clearly intuitive, our mind insists on its proving its credentials, and it is thus that the action of intuition is diluted and delayed. However, the higher mind of humanity, or even we lesser individuals, we have moments when we have experienced the action of the intuitive faculty. We go on laboring, we go on struggling, organizing our thought, coming to certain solutions of problems and all that, and we despair. Suddenly, when we are perhaps not thinking of it, there is a flash, and we know that this is the solution. Those who lead the spiritual life, they know that it is intuition. But the others, they deceive themselves by saying that it is just a rapid action of the mind. I have been thinking, and the delay, this is the delayed result of my thinking labor. In some cases it indeed may be so, but we can know by the freshness and the sharpness of the revelation that it is an act of intuition. Now this occasional play of intuition has to be naturalized, maximized, before we can claim to have a direct working of the intuitive mind in us. He says, extend the action of intuition. We are aware in our best moments how the intuition acts not only in the mind, but here in the heart, even in our physical body. We call it instinct, but still there is the play of self-evident truth at all levels. And Sri Aurobindo says that we must make it a practice to open up all the levels of our being to the play of intuition. It is not merely a mental acquisition. Everywhere, intuition should be made to be active, and that is easy enough, because intuition as a faculty of the revelation of truth is already there, embedded in all forms. Right from matter onwards, the working of intuition, of the concealed intuition, is there. At a lower level of animals, we say it is instinct. They instinctively know what to eat and what not to eat. They instinctively know how to avoid danger. That instinct is nothing but the play of intuition disguised at that level in the form of an instantaneous perception, instantaneous reaction. But with the arrival of the mind at the human stage, the play of intuition gets subdued. We are so much full of our own noise, our own thought activity, sense promptings, that even when intuition acts, we dismiss it or treat it on par with the 101 suggestions that play in our mind. We have to learn to discriminate between our own imaginations, our own conclusions of laborious thinkings, and the sudden promptings of intuition, whether it is in the heart or in the mind or at the vital level. Indeed, it is not possible for us to have recourse only to the play of intuition. The mind, unless it is developed, it can't receive, it can't provide the field for intuition. The play of intuition or the working of intuition is bound to be erratic unless we provide for it a sound mental base. So, a combination of both, development of the mind from below and an evocation of the intuitive faculties from above, that is recommended. We have to purify our mind, enlarge the range of our mind, thoughts, emphasize on movements which expand the horizons of the mind. In a word, culture the mind wider, higher, and at the same time invoke by aspiration, by call, by will, the play of intuition. Both these processes should go together, and it is only after we have got well underway that intuition starts becoming part of our mind, so that it is not an occasional play of intuition but a normal play of intuition becomes possible. In what manner this process is to be combined, the lower ascent and the higher descent, certainly it is not left to our puny mental reason, but to the divine Shakti to which we open ourselves in yoga. It is that Shakti which decides at which time to emphasize on the downward movement, at which moment to tone up the upward process. It is the supreme omniscient Shakti that alone knows, and the seeker has to have that aspiration, collaboration and surrender. Then Sri Aurobindo goes on to describe the various limbs of this process of the development of the mind upwards. so that it can be open to the play of the higher faculties. The first and the more usual step in all spiritual yoga is to silence the mind. The mind is so much lost in its own noise that even if truth perceptions were to sail in, it is very likely that the mind will pass it by. That is why the mind has got to be quieted, silenced. How to silence the mind, we have discussed in our study of the yoga of knowledge. And I presume, whether we are able to practice it or not, mentally we know what are the processes of silencing the mind. Let us take it that we all know how to silence the mind. And the one effect of first slowing the tempo of mental activity, holding it in reins, bifurcating the mind, leaving the surface to deal with the thoughts, and centering our consciousness more towards the immutable self, or keeping out the thoughts by a tremendous exercise of will and making the whole thing blank and vacant, whichever the way we pursue. When the mind is silent, it is then that the self discloses itself. Whether it is the intuitive part of the self, or the illuminative, or the direct self inside, Atman, that reveals itself, depends upon individual after individual, for what he is ready. But in this stage, when the mind is silenced, and the inner self starts disclosing itself, there is an interference. From below, things rise up. Mind interferes. What could this be? What could that be? What it has read somewhere, what it has heard somewhere, it tries to interpret. Based upon what it has heard or read, it tries to interpret. This is what Sri Aurobindo calls the intrusion of the inferior mentality. It is for this purpose that the mind has to be cultured. One has to be vigilant. And these intrusions, interpretations, doubts, they are to be kept out and eventually eliminated. That is one. For those who choose not to go by the path of the mind, who do not live that much in the mind, but who live very much here in the heart, for whom devotion, love, understanding, sympathy, these are more natural than mental understandings, there is the way of devotion, bhakti. Their way is to indraw the attention. The gaze, which is normally outward, is indrawn and steadily pulled within. The whole consciousness is gathered up and directed within in search of the Lord, the Divine Master, who is stationed within the lotus at the heart center. And it is from there that the direct intimations, intuitive intimations start coming. The feelings are correct. Whatever thoughts come, they are coated by this warmth of heart intuition. One doesn't think, one doesn't reason, one doesn't argue, but one knows. The mind just reflects the knowledge that is unrolling itself from the heart. That is another way. Even here, there is bound to be interference from the vital, from the inquisitive mental, and part of some activities of this awakened and enlightened heart center, open to the action of intuition, are apt to have the color of miracles, because they are not reasoned out. They have a miracle nature, they have a nature of certain miracles. We wonder. In spite of it, the opening of the heart center to the play of intuition can only be a stage. It cannot take us by itself to the supermind, though it can normalize the play of intuition in us. It cannot take us beyond, because the heart center is not our highest center. I think we'll stop here. I don't want to hurry up, so we'll stop there. The highest center we'll take up next time. The question is, if the supramental consciousness is increasing its content in the earth consciousness, is there not some sign that things are happening that way? Some things that are characteristic of the supramental consciousness must be more in evidence on earth. Are there such signs? I do think there are. For instance, the convergence of the various movements of human activity towards oneness, whatever their political quarrelings and bickerings, at the level of culture, at the level of industries, science, trade, commerce, all these, in the various fields of activity, the movement towards oneness, wholeness, is increasing. There is no going back today on this trend. The trend is towards unity. There is already a recognition that the world is one. Point is, how to translate this knowledge into effective practice. There is a resistance from the haves to provide for the have-nots. But by and large, there is a recognition that the haves and the have-nots have common interests. This was unheard of, say about 25 years ago. today, those who fight in the battlefields, those who fight in the council debates, in another room, their own representatives are sitting together and finding out ways and means of placing the resources of each other at the disposal of each other. Now this trend towards unity and oneness of life is a special result of the pressure of the supermind. Second, the impossibility of a world war today is a clear sign that the force of harmony has taken root. There may be local battles, local skirmishes, but a world war on the type of the first two world wars is absolutely ruled out. And that is because the force of harmony, the force of oneness has taken root. That the mental barriers self-imposed by modern empirical philosophers and scientists, they are breaking down, and new sciences are emerging. That is another sign that the mental barriers have yielded. Knowledge is expanding, lifespan is expanding, ways and means are being found of conquering the forces of disintegration and death. All these are a direct result of a pressure of a new knowledge, a new consciousness upon the earth mind.
And it gives the idea that the Superman of Ascent comes through man. Man is the highest peak of evolution at this point. That, is it mean then that, let's say, the animal kingdom and the vegetable kingdom will receive the benefit through the agency of man, or will it be an exact?
No, all orders of creation will receive the benefits directly in their terms, not through man. Things that were suppressed, submerged, they will come up. For instance, plants. The higher type of consciousness for which they are struggling, it will form in them without much effort.
They are struggling for
anything? Yes. Yes. The plants. Animals also. They want to know. They want to get beyond their limits. So animals will get nearer the human stage. And in spite of appearances that man is nearing the animal stage once again, but the soul is moving towards the Godhead. At each level, there will be an uplifting action. In the evolutionary scale, there will be an uplifting action. Gold will be more gold, a horse will be more horse, something like that. I can't express. And man will be real man. He will express his manhood, which is to express the truth.
How do you explain, because it's so close, I know you have another question, but I just heard this morning that Dr. Zipko, who is the head of one of these world organizations, had said in his speech that by the end of the century, there wouldn't be any more bad souls.
I see.
That there had been a decision by the higher forces that wouldn't allow any more bad souls to be born, any good souls to be born. Which sounds a bit funny, but then another leader of another world-type organization, another unity organization, whose name I can't remember, Japanese name, who said independently of him that by 2000 it would be very difficult for bad people to continue to sustain themselves in the world. It would be so difficult. because the force of the good would be so strong.
No, it is true, it is true. It is a mental formulation of a higher truth that is manifesting. This is what we said, the mind gives its own coating, good, bad and all that. But the thing is, the the lower tendencies will lose their hold. It will certainly, it won't be within 25 years as we think. But the whole trend is towards that. Whole trend is towards that.